Part two. Well, hello, everyone. This is part two. I am a substitute speaker. This was prepared by Bernard Eastler. It is quite detailed and would probably go down much better with a charming Swiss accent, but instead you get me. So what we're going to go through is a little more, some details, and I will touch on some of the things that Mike said already, just to kind of re-emphasize the architectural aspects of this, because there are, just because it's good to hear it twice, and then we'll go into some of the details about certificate management and people, you know, ask what are the scary details of this, because this sounds too good to be true. And so hopefully at the end of going through all these details, you will get a sense of what's involved in setting up a secure system, all the players that might need to be involved. But I also want to say that don't let your eyes glaze over too much, because it's the installing vendor's job to make this easy for you. If whoever your primary system integrator is on the job, they're the ones that need to really read all these slides, understand all the steps, and you as a customer, hopefully they make that easy for you. So if you are a system integrator, then you need to pay attention to this, because you need to know how to make all these details, all these moving pieces work. But keep in mind that we want to have it be as seamless as possible for the customers, so that they can actually benefit from this, they enjoy SC, and not say, what the heck, it was so much easier working with the IT department. So we hope that's never true. One of the things that Mike talked about is that because you don't have to punch holes in the firewall, I guess I would just re-emphasize these, static IP addresses are not required anymore. This is all done with URLs. So you might have to ask the IT department for one URL of the hub, you know, give it a DNS name so somebody can type in HTTP kind of whatever and give it a name. But that's it. The rest of it, the HVAC building automation installers handle themselves, with no other permissions needed, no other special requirements needed from the IT department. So we're going to go through, these are the things we're going to see. Mike talked about the network topologies. That's good. We'll talk about how to specify it, implement it, and maintain the systems. And then I'm sure bullet point four is, after my riveting presentation, you will appreciate the underlying security inherent in BACnet SC, and you'll love it. So here we go. Again, acknowledgments, Mike. I guess that's me. Thank you, Bernard, for acknowledging me. Again, these are Bernard's slides, so all credit for this goes to Bernard. And here's what we're going to run down, and you'll find out as I go. You notice PKI, CA, and certificates. That's the scary part, and hopefully we can make it a little more understandable when you get there. All right, and this is, again, an overview of what Mike showed, and mainly the hub and spoke. I'm sure you guys coordinated on graphics, because obviously you did. The key little thing up there at the top, you see everybody connecting hub and spoke, but then those two little guys at the top are talking directly to each other. And Mike went over the benefits of that. But I think that's a key aspect, because whenever you talk about BACnet SC and you express it in terms of a hub and spoke, people immediately say, oh, well, that's a bandwidth choke, a fail point, whatever. I think Mike did an excellent job of explaining all the different ways that that is, ameliorated. You can get rid of the choke points. You get rid of a failure position. And there's actually a real benefit to the hub and spoke model, and that is that you don't have to support this direct connect. This is an advanced feature. Your light bulb doesn't accept any incoming connections whatsoever. Your little light bulb, to participate in this, simply you give it a URL of the hub, and that's it. One piece of configuration, and he's done. He connects to the hub, does all his conversations through the hub, and he's happy. So we designed this so that you can make extremely simple devices. And in redundancy perspective, one of the key things that we do in SC that is different from other redundancy and IT things is, if you want a hot backup of a server, any server in IT, you've got to get the IT's involved to do things like IP spoofing, where the warm backup comes up and it says, hey, I'm over here, I'm your new guy. So you need to do a bunch of IT magic to make this backup work. That's because the clients are stupid. They're just connecting to the same URL, hoping it comes back alive again. Well, that requires a lot of IT magic to make that backup work. So we decided that we would put just two URLs in every device. So the ability to go to a backup is built in. So again, no IT, you get this failover behavior with no IT magic needed. I'm way off Bernard's topic, but I thought that was an important thing to emphasize. Mike didn't talk about authentication, and that's of course what Bernard's slides are all about here. So TLS, you mentioned TLS 1.3. TLS 1.3 is how you connect to your bank. You're probably using TLS 1.2 now. But the way that works is, you know, you connect to the bank and you've probably heard about certificates and all that kind of stuff, HTTPS instead of HTTP. And when you connect to your bank, you get this nice little green thing at the top of your banner that says, yes, that bank matches. You typed in bankofamerica.com and he says he's bankofamerica.com and his VeriSign certificate says, yes, he is bankofamerica.com. Great. Bankofamerica.com has no idea who you are. That is a one-way thing. Your little browser is connecting to Bank of America, and yes, but he doesn't know who you are. That's why you have to type in your username and password. So once you've established this secure tunnel, now you say who you are by typing in your username and your password. Well, a light bulb is not going to have a username and a password. So if the model is different, we're using the same technology of TLS that HTTPS uses, but we're doing something called mutual authentication. So the light bulb authenticates the hub, and at the same time, the hub authenticates the light bulb. They both exchange certificates. They both check each other out, and no username and password is needed once that's done. So the tunnel is not like when you're connecting your bank, it's a one-way tunnel. This is a two-way tunnel, and then no further information is needed to authenticate the two ends because they have something called a public key. I have a public key, you have a public key, we both sign by a certificate, I'll get to that in the next slides, and we go, check, check, you're a member, we become siblings, we're fine, and that's it. So no further authentication is needed. So that's how we do it here, because it's just a fundamentally different way of doing it from the bank. Now the nice thing is this is still an outbound connection. So the hub doesn't, it's not like the hub has to connect the light bulb. The light bulb always connects to the hub. Outbound through the firewall, as Mike showed. That's a really important feature, and I'll repeat it again, because the connections are always from the nodes outbound to the hub. The hub is the only one that accepts connections. And so he's out there in the cloud somewhere with a publicly addressable IP address, with a publicly known URL. That's fine, but all the little devices don't need to be contacted, so they contact the hub. But that doesn't mean the authentication is only in one direction like it is with the bank. Once the connection is established, then the mutual authentication goes back down that same channel and says, hey, who are you? Okay, now we can talk. So that's what this slide is about. Now, how does that happen? Each side has what's called a private key and a public certificate. The public key, this is PKI, public key infrastructure, private, public, anyway. P stands for both. It's a way of me having a public-facing certificate. That's my identity. But I have a private key that matches that, and it matches mathematically and cryptographically, and it's really complicated details. But the point is that when we talk and I'm using that certificate, I'm proving that I own this private key without actually showing you the private key because of the way these things work. So I have my private key, and he has his private key, and we both have these public certificates. Now, there's something called a certificate authority, which is, in the case of Bank of America, I mentioned, it's VeriSign, or that's the most famous one, but it's some public agency that is signing Bank of America's certificate. Well, we don't actually want that, because if you do something like that, then every certificate in every building signed by VeriSign would look like part of the same family. We don't actually want that. We want you to have a signing certificate that is specific to your site, to your facility. It could be specific to a customer or specific to an individual network. And that's what these CAs are, these little CA certificates here. And the certificate authority signs these public certificates so that when you give me your public certificate, I can check it against my signing authority and say, yes, you're one of me. Because if you give me a public certificate that doesn't match this thing I have, I go, you're either mistaken, you're from some other BACnet installation, maybe you got taken out of a box and put on the wall and you're trying to connect and you think you're part of the family, but you're not. Or you could be a bad guy. In either case, I'm going to not accept the connection. And now this slide indicates, if you go back through, I'm going to go through these pretty quick, but indicates a transition period. This shows two CAs, so a signing certificate A and B. These are not necessarily different organizations. This is just maybe in time because certificates do expire. So you'll have certificate A and everybody's happily working on certificate A, both sides, and then you have to somehow transition everybody over to B. Well, you can't shut down your network to do that. Maybe the certificate was good for a year and you want to give everybody a new one. So the hub hangs out on the old one. You see the hub over here, the server side, he's using the old certificate on certificate A, which is signed by certificate authority A, but the client is ready for the transition. So he's got this new certificate and a new authority. So he presents it to the hub, and the hub goes, oh, okay, I see that you're not the same one I sent you. They're actually two different authorities went in opposite directions, but they both trust each other because they've been told, okay, if you get something from a new guy, let him in. And then after everybody, after all the clients have the blue certificate, then the hub switches over to blue, and then the yellow's gone. So basically, that's the transition. You transition all your clients slowly over to the new certificates, and then when everybody's over, then you flip the hub, and now certificate A, which is the outdated one, is effectively gone. You could remove it, or you could just leave it lying there, which is typically what you do. You just leave it lying there until you got a certificate C to come in and bump out the A, and you do the transover that way. So this is really, and this again is one of those scary things that, oh my gosh, I have to maintain my BACnet SC. No, this is an example of where BACnet SC is very security best practices aware. It is letting you do this if your building, your customer, your data, your paranoia level requires you to swap out certificates. You can also just put in 100-year certificates and never see this problem. It's entirely up to you. BACnet SC supports whatever policy you want for your data. So you can basically put in certificates and then never change them out. That is entirely up to you. But we wanted to support whatever is needed, and we did. So these are the different trust scopes. I mentioned a certificate authority. The certificate you use to sign all those guys establishes sort of a circle of trust. And it doesn't have to be the same for your entire facility. It just has to be the same among peers that connect to the hub. So you could have a different signing key over here for a different hub, for a different purpose. So anyway, these are sort of advanced topics that if you're really into security, and I know one person that might be in the room, if you're really into wanting to implement BACnet SC in the most secure, most limited trust, small circles of trust, you can have individual signing authorities for each group of devices and put them on their own hub with their own certificates, and then they say, well, how can they talk to each other? You know, if this group is restricted and this group is restricted, how can they possibly talk to each other? As Mike showed, this is just a data link to BACnet. The BACnet routers will route the BACnet traffic between those two. And then we get into an interesting thing, which I don't think is anywhere on these slides, and that is because we have these routers that route BACnet traffic, that's the job of a router, is to take a BACnet message from somewhere in the universe and get it all the way through to its destination. Well, we've got these secure networks now, but we can route to a non-secure network. Wait a minute. What's going on? So I plug into my BACnet IP, not SC, the original BACnet, or MSTP, and I send a message through to somebody on SC. He gets it, And he goes, wow, of course, back to message. Let me respond to that. Well, wouldn't it be nice if that guy knew where that message came from and whether he might trust it or not? So we have what's called we used to call it the trusted bit, which was a nice little phrase, but now it's a little bit in the header. It's now an option that goes with the data that says, this message originated in BACnet SC. It may have gone from SC to SC to SC, but when it gets to you, you knew that it never left. And that's different from a message that originates on MSTP or BACnet IP. So if you want to make a policy decision on what messages you act on, you can look at that and decide, no, I'm only going to allow the workstation or some other part of the trusted network to do because I don't know where this packet came from otherwise. So, but if somebody just wants to read my device name, that's fine. I'll do that. So we do have one layer of authentication now with BACnet SC where I can know where the message came from, but we're using standard BACnet routing. So I should probably look at how much time I have left. Oh, good. Okay. Okay. This is just a description again of the public key infrastructure that I mentioned, and I don't think we need to go over too much of this again. The peers authenticate each other, and I think this is a. If you don't know about how PKI works, it's actually quite clever. Maybe go to Wikipedia and see. You can get an example of how this public and private key interact with each other and how clever it is. So I don't want to, can't do it justice. But it's a neat idea, and it's basically what makes HTTPS work. It's an old idea now, but TLS 1.3 is a big improvement over 1.2. The original 1.0 and 1.1 were great, but by the time they got to 1.2, they started getting bloated and they had too many options, and some of the options were not quite so secure, so TLS 1.3 really locked all that down, simplified it. TLS 1.3 is smaller and more secure. What's not to love? I think I've described enough about how all this works. How when you get a message and you get the other guy's certificate, you check it against the certificate authority that you have to decide whether you trust him or not. And we even talked about the transition. Now, one thing that you'll maybe want to do, typically you would do, a customer should own, and this not particularly on this slide, but we'll basically say who owns the certificate authority. That sounds like an important thing. It's called authority, right? So if we're not using VeriSign, if we're not using publicly signed certificates, then where is the root of trust? Who owns the certificate authority for your site? Well, it might be created by somebody, some system integrator or manufacturer comes on your job and he starts installing the hub and he creates it. Creates this root certificate. Great. He doesn't own it. And anyone who's ever given me heard me give a presentation on this knows this is my little pet peeve, and I will always make sure, and it's even written in the standard, that the customer owns that root. So in a proper installation, any vendor is free to make up this ultimate root of trust, but he has to give it to the customer on a USB stick. Mr. Customer, this is your private key and your root. This is your certificate of authority. Now, that's the root. Now, typically what the customer will do is whoever the installing guy will also make a derivative from that, and that's the signing certificate. So the customer gets to keep the ultimate root in a safe somewhere, but the signing certificate is the little CA, certificate A and B, the little blue, the different colors. Those are the signing certificates that are used operationally throughout the system. But ultimately, the customer could go back out and create another one of those and redistribute and do it all again. So you're not locked in. Nobody's walking away with the keys. The customer owns the keys. And that just explains in detail how the signing works. Now, one thing, yes, there we go. This is on here. And this is a bit of a detail, and again, this is where your vendors, if they're doing the right thing by you, are going to make this easy. But here's how the process would work. How did this little dog, how did this light bulb or this little device, this VAV box controller, how did it get its certificate in the first place? Because when you think about it, it doesn't want to talk to you. It's a secure device. By its nature of BACnet SC, it doesn't want to talk to you. So how do you talk to it to give it its certificate in the first place, and to give it the URL of the hub in the first place? So there is a bit of a chicken and egg here. Now, the other thing is, his operational certificate that he has matches his private key, as we said, right? When I have a certificate and I give it to the other guy, that certificate matches mathematically and cryptographically, matches my private key. I don't want to give you my private key. So how are you going to give me a certificate that matches my private key if I don't want to give you my private key? So there's two ways to do this. One is you can build a product that does accept a private key. That's one way to do it. So somebody's tool says, okay, I'm going to make a certificate and a private key, and I'm going to hope nobody's looking, and I'm going to give you your private key and the certificate through some back channel on a wire on your desk, somewhere hopefully not across the internet, because I'm handing you a private key now, and I want you to keep it, but I'm doing that through the wire. That's not the best way of doing it. That is a way to do it, but that's not the best way. So the best way then is for you to always keep your private key. You make it up, you hide it, but now how do I give you a certificate? So I go to you and say, you know what? Make up a public certificate. With your private key, make up a public certificate. That's no good yet, because it's not signed by the certificate authority, but it matches his private key. So I take that certificate from the device, and I somehow send it, and you could just email it. It's a public certificate. It's nothing secret about it. Take that from the device, and I email it to whoever is in charge of signing stuff, to the signing authority. And you probably would email 100 of them, you know, here's a bunch of certificates from all my devices. And he runs it through something, boom, 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 and now he's signing that certificate with the certificate authority for the building. And then he sends it back, and you give that back to the device. Now, because it's been countersigned, so the certificate came from the device, so it matches his private key, and all you've done is you've given it a little countersignature at the bottom. That signature at the bottom is what's verified when I send that to the other guy. So that's how it works. And that's what's called a certificate signing request. And if you notice bullet item right here, you say that's what this process is. The device generates a certificate signing request, which is basically a certificate that hasn't been signed yet, sends it off by some means, maybe electronic, maybe automated, who knows what the tool chain of the vendor is. I said email, that's kind of like a worst case scenario. It's a very manual process. Hopefully, whoever your installing vendor is, it just works. You install a device, it automatically goes off, automatically gets signed, and automatically comes back. I mean, you know, we're in the age of automation. But when you're dealing with multiple vendors, perhaps you might have to break down and use some other form of, you know, here's all my signing requests on a USB, and you get them back. So hopefully we can make all that work. In the future, BACnet is working on those standards as well. Right now, the mechanism by which you sign certificates is not standardized, but the BACnet committee recognizes that, and we are now working on those mechanisms as well. So in the future, there will be even communication standards for doing that signing automatically. So there's no USBs, no emails. Okay, so you can see that each certificate that comes out of the little light bulb, I optionally may identify that it's a light bulb and its manufacturer and where it's located or whatever, but it could maybe not have that stuff. All of that stuff is optional. The only thing that really matters is his public key. That's the identity, because it matches the private key. So nobody else can use that public key. So when you have, if you want to make an authorization decision with this Direct Connect, for example, you could maybe have a policy that says, I'm only going to talk to Direct Connects from these three people, maybe the workstation or the archiver, right? So when you get a Direct Connect request and it's from some nutty device, sure, he's one of the family, but why is a VAV box directly connecting to me? I don't think so. That might be a mistake. That not necessarily an attack, but maybe a mistake, a configuration error. So we're adding this extra layer of security where in your direct connect accepting, you could have possibly one or two public keys of your peer that you will accept and you will not accept others. So direct connects are just, as I said, with a little secure bit thing that says this message originated within the security and never left. We have even one more way of restricting what you accept by saying, I'm only going to accept direct connects from people I have been told to accept direct connects from. So there are layers of security you can add in BACnet SC. Or you can not worry about all of that and just have infinite life certificates and everybody trusts everybody. But at least you're keeping the barbarians out. At least the people on the internet are not able to talk to your stuff. And at least some misconfigured tool on your local IP network is not accidentally wiping out some of your stuff. So, I mean, the SC has a wide range of deployment options. And I want to give about 10 minutes for questions, so I guess we've got about 2 more minutes to run through here. This is a very well put together list of actors involved, and I am you all will have access to these slides after the presentation, so I'm not going to go through these line by line, but it shows part of what I described about the flow of who does what. Who owns what, how the certificates get signed, the different players that may or may not be involved. If you are on a extremely controlling, careful customer's site, even though we have said repeatedly you don't have to involve IT, right? This is we designed BACnet SC so that an HVAC contractor can go in and do it all themselves. You know, they don't need to involve IT in any way. On some sites, IT might want to be involved. IT already has the certificate authority. This is not new. The fact that IT has their own certificates, their own route in a safe somewhere, and their own signing certificates, and they've been doing this for years, there's no reason you wouldn't come in and just use that infrastructure. Then they might want you to. If you're going to get on our network, you have to have one of our certificates. And that's fine. And that's where this more complicated layer of stuff comes in. So again, BACnet SC was designed to work in any scenario, from extreme corporate lockdown requirements to simply coming in and just doing it all yourself. This is an example of when every BACnet device has a PICS, which is protocol implementation statement, and it basically says what you do, and we've added all these fields to the PICS that basically let you, when you buy a product or you're thinking about buying a product, you can see, does it accept direct connects? If so, how many? Is it a hub? Is it not a hub? All that kind of stuff. So we've added all that to the declaration of a product, so you can read those when you as a customer. We've added new BACnet interoperable building blocks, so the customers can easily say what they want. And I am out of time. So again, there's roles of the different groups, different people. You see the specifiers, the ITs, the planners, etc. Now here's all the extensions we're looking at. We're looking at more authentication. Different types of hubs, possibly an MQTT is instead of a BACnet native hub. Those are all extensions that we're working on in the committee as next for BACnet SC. And apparently, I have no conclusion. So, thank you, Bernard. You saved me some time. Oh, no, here we go. These are the different places that the information exists. TLSC Wikipedia. Thank you, Bernard. That's exactly what I just said. Yes. All right. And questions, direct them to this guy. No. only question appears to be, can we leave now?
Yes.
Yes, yes, please.
Bruce Billet, Maverick Technologies. Is this thing on? There it is. Did you imagine that the manufacturers will be the certificate authorities? I mean, is that what you're going to envision, or you didn't have any preference? I mean,
no, and that's I don't want them to be.
Okay,
and that's my pet peeve. And if I had a bigger soapbox to stand on, I would stand on it. There's no vendor lock-in here at all. And so whoever the first manufacturer was on the job, and the truth is most jobs are generally one manufacturer and they're installing system integrator, right? So they come in, they put in the routers, they put in all the devices, and they'll be the ones to generate the keys and generate the signing certificate, and it's their tool that's getting the CSRs and sending them back, and probably all their stuff. But that root certificate belongs to the customer. So that if that relationship goes sour, the next vendor comes in and says, well, I got to be able to talk to your devices. I got to be able to give them new certificates. And so where is your root? The customer says, here it is, right here.
All right. You definitely, ownership is to the building owner.
Yes.
So then that goes back to the other thing, too, is building owners are notoriously for losing things like that, which is the root of part of this having certificates.
A private key that would be needed to reconstruct the route,
yes,
is about seven lines of numbers.
You're right.
And so just print it out.
Okay.
Leave it lying around.
There you go.
Give it out to everybody. Put it on your company motto. There's no real solution to that, other than if it's absolutely lost and you can't talk to your devices and there's no way. These are secure devices. They're shut down. You'd have to reset them to factory defaults and start over again. But hopefully that never happens.
My name is DMS Tranafilo, VA Hospital. Relative to regular BACnet, what's the cost difference of this compared to if you don't, just curious?
Well, since I don't make anything anymore, I'm going to give it to somebody who does. No.
From the perspective, if your product already has advanced capabilities, then adding TLS can be relatively lightweight. It's the coding cost is going to be your challenge. So how that gets transferred to the end user, that's up to the particular vendors. But the physical cost, if they've already got the hardware in there, is simply time.
Okay.
Yeah, this isn't because as Mike showed, it's data link independent. So this, if you're talking BACnet IP today, then you already have the hardware you need, whether it's Wi-Fi or Ethernet or whatever. You already have the hardware on your device to support BACnet SC. It's just a question of whether you have enough space and software to support TLS and on top of that.
And performance. TLS 1.3 does have some performance capability or limitations. So it can, like 150 megahertz device will take 12 or 13 seconds or 15 seconds to initiate a connection, for example, as opposed to a more advanced device that's running at half a mega or 500 megahertz can take 1 second or less. So it comes down to performance of the devices you have today.
Right. And note, he said initiate connection. Note that these connections are not every time you want to send a message, because you're only doing this when you connect to the hub. Once you've connected, it's much less overhead. All the heavy math is.
Rick Padlock with HP Engineering. So how fast can I do this? I mean,
how
can
fast?
I start changing specs like tomorrow?
There are devices out there now with SC in it. Whether they're actually released or not, I don't know. I can't say what other vendors are doing.
So if I've got an existing BACnet buildings and I'm college, K-12, hospital with multiple buildings. Can I go back and retrofit kind of at the top from what that diagram looked like? So that's a matter of picking a number of hubs and routers that can handle however many BACnet objects I've got?
You can choose where you want to deploy SC. You can deploy it at the access to your building. So I'm going to change the access of my building so it's only entering my building. I'm going to call out. So there's no more VPNs or security by obscurity concepts. It's all real security using BACnet SC, but it's only at the building. Or you could bring it down to maybe your higher level IP stuff, or you can go lower level IP. It's up to you.
But again,
thank you. The more you do, the more devices that have to be upgraded to support that.
Right. And because this is a data link and can be routed, you could take your existing BACnet IP, whatever that is. If you were extending IP out of your building through a VPN, and you really, and the VPN's ornery and it's annoying and you want to get rid of it, then you put in a router that is BACnet IP to BACnet SC right there behind your firewall in that building. And then everything, and it connects out to the hub in the cloud. So all your buildings are connected with SC, and you can eliminate the VPN. And as Mike showed, you can very nicely talk from one building up through to another building that way without having to, you know, connect to a VPN and disconnect from a VPN and all that annoyance. Mm-hmm. So.
John Gross, JM Gross Engineering. So one of the fundamental things that you guys talked about is the mutual authentication between the devices, so you didn't have to have a login and so on and so forth, right? So in the situation where you've got a cloud hub or something along those lines, so you have a remote connection in, you showed on there that the laptop that was used to log in is part of that network. What happens when the technician's laptop gets stolen out of their car?
Well, the password of the laptop hopefully hasn't been stolen too, but again, if they break in, it's security's only as good as the device. So if you've got your workstation doesn't have security, so you need to have security in your laptop, you need to have security in your workstation software itself. So there's two levels there of the user. Yeah. If he's got 123 in his password, then he's got access to
it. It just seems like that's actually an added vulnerability there as opposed to having a VPN if in case the laptop gets out of their control.
Well, your VPN doesn't have to have authentication either, right?
Yeah, depending on how it's set up. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Okay. So the risk is it comes down to risk, and if you're concerned about that, then you can have secondary layers of authentication in the software itself.
Right. And remember that everything it's mutually authenticated, but you know there's. You're right.
We're not authenticating the user.
No, we're not authenticating the user at this point.
That workstation's job is to make authentication of the user.
Right. Now, interestingly, you used to say that is because the BACnet committee right now is working on adapting OAuth, which was actually done for BACnet Web Services. BACnet Web Services does that similar thing. You mutually authenticate TLS, but then when you actually want to do an operation, you have to go to an authentication server who authenticates you by perhaps Active Directory or whatever. Then it looks up a policy based on your credentials that you've provided at that moment, and then you get a token that you can then use to get your message through. And the other end is going to go, yeah, I see your connection, I see you're one of me, but you can't actually write to that property without a token that you got from somebody who did verify your identity dynamically. So, and the tokens can be short-lived. That token could be a 1 day or 1 hour or whatever. So that's in the works. We have that mechanism in BACnet Web Services. We're now taking that and moving it to classic BACnet as well, and it will be operated under SC.
Okay. Frank Schatt for SC Engineers. Great presentation. I think this is a game changer. I think you referred to it, but can you explain once more, how is it affecting the data link layer? And are we adding to it? You know, is it still Ethernet, or how is it going to affect it?
It is Ethernet or Wi-Fi. It doesn't matter anymore because it's at another layer slightly above it. From the IP point of view, it's another layer above it. So now you can easily transport it, like I said, across a pigeon. It doesn't matter. It's a package. And because we have the concept of routing, so we've kept it from a logical thing. It's network layer is still here. IP's over here. SC's over here. Communications come up across the network and down. Okay, you can think about it from that perspective. Networking, totally maintained.
So fundamentally, it's remained the same, or you're adding to that layer?
And we're not adding to the network layer. We're creating a new data link, a new way of communicating.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Christian Kohler, Lawrence Berkeley Lab. How does certificate revocation happen? If you have multiple hubs, I'm assuming you have to go into every hub and revoke, let's say the case of the laptop getting stolen. I'm assuming there's a way to revoke certificates?
Yes, support for standard CRL mechanisms, certificate revocation lists, and everything is explicitly optional in the standard. So we don't say you can't do it, but we also don't define our own way. We certainly would not want to. I mean, there are mechanisms for doing certificate revocation out there, and we just say if you want that for your site, you use those methods, and we're not ruling on it.
Okay, and
how you know, but it can be a tricky thing.
Okay, thank you.
Joe Kilcoyne with SA Engineers. I'll press the first gentleman's question. If you had to guess adoption rates from major manufacturers for offering these picks with BACnet SE, 1 year, 5 years, or 10 years?
Oh, there's products. I shouldn't say this. There's vendors out there today who have BACnet SE. We are pushing the adoption very hard on the marketing side of BACnet, is pushing it, and they're supporting it financially to make sure it happens. They are providing reference products as well, reference solutions. So I think we're going to see SC this year. There will be some products that will be touting untested BACnet SC because any time you build something, you get it out, it has to be tested at the labs, and that takes time. The labs are already, the BTL working group is already working on tests in anticipation for this. So we know we're going to have a very quick adoption rate.
Thank you.
But I think it's going to be this year. Whether it gets down into a lot of controllers, that's a big question mark. That one I just don't know.
To follow on that, one of the things Mike mentioned is that this is protocol revision independent. And that's a really important thing because this is the first time ever in the history of 22 revisions of BACnet over 20-something years, we have everything we publish in the standard, you have to, in order to use it, you have to be at that level of the standard, which means you have to do everything else that has been published. So if your product is 8 years behind, you have to catch up 8 years of changes before you can get that goodie that we just threw in there. It's kind of a carrot and stick thing, right? We thought the BACnet SC is so important for market adoption that we threw it in there and said, you can use this now. First thing we've ever published, that you can just use it now.
And get it tested.
And get it tested
now
on an old product.
Yeah.
I have to cut you off. Sorry.
Yep.
Okay.
Good.
We've been
Thank you very
off.
Much.